Okay.
Tony!
I think we're recording. So, you
want to
say?
Do you want me to pause it while you're on break? Or
no.
Yes, we just 7:32, and we will pause for a brief recess. It is now 7:45, and we will adjourn back into open session to continue our interviews of the architects.
So, in other words, I got to have a check.
Okay, Dr. Murphy, could you bring our next group, which will be
more.
A good idea, Patsy. I'm going to ask my grandchildren.
Yeah, you know, because I'm going to bring Jenny and
I think Anna and Alyssa would like.
It's open. It's open.
There's no connection.
Oh, yeah, not so much.
We're blank. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Hi, I'm Murphy, superintendent.
Good evening, Laurie Searles. It's a pleasure.
Armando Rodriguez. Nice to meet you.
Mr. Kroger, it's a pleasure. Laurie Searles.
Hi, Leti Gonzalez. Nice to meet you.
Right up here, guys, the hot seat.
We have got a really tight timeline here. And with that in mind, we have a set of seven questions between your two chairs. Please don't write on them. But thank you very much. Take a few moments, 3 to 4 minutes, to read those over. And after that, we'll give you 20 minutes to respond to those seven questions. And after the 20 minutes, we'll take 10 minutes to ask you questions. So if you see me, I'm going to keep my eye on the clock. So if I'm giving you this or, you know, interrupt you, I'm not being rude. It's just in the time issue. Okay, so please. Read your questions, and then we'll begin.
Something to keep
okay.
There you go, absolutely.
Let me know when you're ready.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Is everyone ready?
Yeah, I think we've got it.
No, we're not ready just yet.
May we begin?
Ready?
All right.
Okay. First question, and we won't read the questions. It just takes up time.
I won't speak to the experience the other firms have, but we have a great deal of experience in K through 8. We're right now doing it's actually a combo school for support within the school district, but it's elementary school, core facility, middle school. It's a site adaptive, another one we did that was very successful for them, and it's about to be, we're shooting for LEED Gold. It's under, we're completing design development on it right now. We've also done the last, I think, 5 elementary schools for EPISD about that. I think the other thing that'll separate us from everybody else is there's 4 principals in our firm, Reverend Moore, Leonard Bardell, myself, and Renee Venice. And we have a philosophy in our firm that, a little bit like if you went to the doctor and you never got past the nurse, you wouldn't be real happy. And I've worked in a lot of other firms before coming to work with Nerva, and that's frankly how most firms work. You meet the principal at the beginning of the job, do a few things, and then the staff shows up. That won't ever happen with us. We design the buildings, we manage the process, we have a principal dedicated to doing construction administration, Leonard Nordell. So your interface will be with one of the principal owners who's got a stake in the project and has the experience from prior work than somebody we hired. I guess the other key factor is the sustainability aspect of it, which kind of flows through your questions here. Mervyn Moore founded our firm back in 1985, did the Sergeant's Major Academy out of Fort Bliss, if any of y'all are familiar with that. And that's probably one of the most sustainable, well-designed facilities in the area. It's essentially the West Point for NCO officers. It was, I guess you could say it was green before there was such a thing as green. It's one of the best daylit buildings in the country, I believe. And then we kind of just built on that. When Renee came to work for us back in
2005,
she took it upon herself to form the local chapter of the USGBC and served as its founding chair. Is now on the West Regional Chapter. And she took everyone kicking and screaming with her. But it's worked out very well. We did the first LEED new construction project in the city of El Paso.
We were actually the first to have LEED accredited professionals within our firm as well.
Yes, I guess I should mention that Renee and I are both LEED APs. So again, the principals will be doing all the LEED analysis. Question 2. Really great schools, how the rest of the community. And this kind of ties into some smart growth stuff, how you down to number 3, but sustainability obviously is a biggie. You know, if you're thinking about the impact of the school, traffic patterns, another general teaching environment of how you design the school is very important. I believe that buildings themselves actually can be teaching tools. We even went to the point where several years back we designed a library at Terrace Hills out in Northeast Reed ISD where we exposed everything, the conduits, the ductwork, color-coded stuff. And when I was a kid, we had these invisible man models where you could kind of see how stuff works. And that's how we treated the building. It was a learning tool for the kids. And there's a lot of opportunities, I think, in that. The school that you see on the cover, that little booklet there, actually has some in there where we constructing some overhead cable tension systems with strut members that sort of float out into space. Again, it's a geometric teaching tool if they want to use it. It also serves function as a shade structure out in the school.
And you kind of touch on that also, and also in that same school, we have a bunch of components that kind of will help the students learn. We have a system that's in that same courtyard, some gardens that will assist the kids in gardening and just nurturing.
The bus drop-offs, we're putting solar panels out there right in front of the school so everybody can see them. The kids can see them. They're waiting for the bus. They'll be able to see. We'll expose all the conduit and everything. Again, just something that if the administration of the school will utilize it, we can give them some teaching tools.
Winter lines.
Yeah. Number three, sustainability. This is Lee and Slater involved here. I blame her for everything. When Lee ties my hands and I have to do things a certain way. I don't know, have you all done a Lee? Have started a LEED project yet? It's basically a point rating system, okay? So you're going to end up buying points, is what kind of boils down to. When you choose a rating level, and I don't know that you, I don't think you indicate here if you're just looking for accredited or silver or gold,
or even LEED at all.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a sustainable building or not.
Remember, LEED is a brand. It just means you get that stamp at the end after you've gone through all the bureaucratic stuff, and it creates a great deal of paperwork and so on and so forth. So she and I kind of, production. because I'm kind of the design guy of the group, and she's the green lady. So I think we have a significant amount of sustainability.
Right, but regardless if our clients would like to achieve a LEED certification or not, we always take sustainability in our design tent. We always take that.
As far as the smart growth goes, I mean, that's sort of a development standard, if you will. The city of El Paso passed one back in 2008 or 9, I believe. And is site selection part of this process? Or
it's already purchased, yeah.
So some of those opportunities might be by the wayside. But again, you're really kind of, you're an island within a smart growth development. So. But there's the concepts of the safe neighborhoods and the safe routing. The multi-use of the facilities that's built into smart growth that I think we could work into it. And frankly, it kind of overlaps a lot of LEED points, so it kind of helps you there. I'm not really familiar with this Caudill Award, so I can't really speak to that, to be honest with you.
But again, back to the community, MK is really, we really try to involve the community within our design. We've done several public meetings with the different schools that we have designed for the various school districts. So we really do involve the public. They write their comments down, we come back and present to them again, and showing them that we did address this.
Yeah, it's important, I think, that your constituency understands they've been heard. We like to have these meetings, get their input. It doesn't mean that all the wish list items end up there. We can at least tell them which ones we can and can't deal with and why, and, you know. And a lot of people just appreciate the fact that they got a voice in the process. When we did the big project at the airport back in 91 through 98, those of you who were here at the time might remember, it was a very controversial project. We did 70 some odd community meetings on that.
And that kind of goes back into the number 5 question with regards to
Yeah, if you get it right up front, your program becomes your roadmap and your litmus test as you're moving forward. Because we can spend the time in the beginning of the job understanding exactly what you want and why, then we're just evaluating as we move forward. We're not recreating and coming up with better mouse traps, you know, too late in the game. Did I skip 4 though?
Yes.
I thought I did, yes. The Socorro Combo School, are any of y'all familiar with how they do these combo schools? We've done 2 of them. In their sense, it's actually 2 separate schools. They have separate administrations, separate principals, and everything. What they share is a library and a kitchen. They have separate cafeterias and all that. I know you're not looking for 2 separate schools, but you're looking for the opportunity for some, it sounds like some segregation between age groups out there. You could take that same concept, really, and kind of do that. I think it's like the next to last project in there. Right there. On the, can I borrow you just a second? If you look at this, essentially what you've got here is middle school, elementary school, the kitchen is here, and the library is here. So you could very logically just take out the administration portion. I'm not saying use this plan. But what I would do is use some of the common areas to separate them. And then let them come together in those areas that you control better, like the cafeteria and stuff like that, but that you're going to share. You've got the staffing and stuff to deal with, you know, any issues that might come between little guys and big guys sharing the same borders.
And then as far as site elements go, that's the same thing, really. Put the elementary side, the lower.
Let
the
their play
kids.
Areas be closer to their classroom. Let the, you know, the middle schools tend to use the big play fields and stuff. The little guys tend to use the playgrounds and just, you know, big grass areas around it. And if you can get some separation in those on the site, I'm not talking about building a Berlin Wall in between anybody, but I think, you know, if you can kind of just keep them segregated a little bit, that cuts down on your staffing needs, I think, for monitoring folks. We kind of hit five already, so I'll jump down to six. CM at risk. I'm becoming a big believer, I'll be honest with you. I know that first project I mentioned at the airport, that was a CM project. It was the very first large CM project in El Paso. It was an absolute disaster, I'll be honest with you. It was a CM agent project where the city ended up holding 32 separate contracts. The CM didn't hold any of them, so they didn't have responsibility for budget or schedules or anything. And it was a giant train wreck watching over a five-year period. However, there are some very good, very professional CM firms that are coming through town. Jordan is one of the few good local. There's a lot of contractors that are calling themselves CMs. Jordan's a good local one. We're working with Sunt on the new combo school for Socorro right now. Very professional group. We're involved in the 200 plus million over down at University Medical Center. There's a CM at risk called Robbins and Morton, the most professional contractor I've ever dealt with. I will tell you, I believe it costs you more to go CM at risk than it does a bid job, but I think you'll have less problems during construction, especially if you bring them on during design. If you don't bring them on during design, they don't have as much stake in what gets developed. And your budget is a little less under control. If they can do the design phase estimating, so much the better. If they can do constructability during design, it just keeps them from having that ability to kind of point fingers around and say they didn't know. They're there. They're part of the team, you know, and they got just as much stake in it as you and I do at that point. Number seven, obviously I'd like to do the big project. But I've never done work for Ken 2. We do a lot of work at Socorro and UPSD, and we've done a few things over at Isleta and Clint, but I've never worked here. So if I have to do a little one to prove myself, I guess I will, but I think it's a waste of my talent.
We like honesty.
But I'd like to work with you.
We've done a lot of HVAC projects.
We've done some of the largest renovation projects in the city. As Renee was starting to say, we're doing a project for Isleta where we're basically re-roofing the old Isleta High School and renovating parts of the interior, replacing the mechanical system. It's the oldest school in our district. You guys are kind of a new district, so I don't think you have too much time.
Just gently.
That's a nice thing. You don't have a bunch of old tired buildings yet.
You've still got 6 minutes within your 20. Is there any
extra points for that?
Uh-huh, you're the first. Would you like to tell us anything else or something that we might ought to look at in your book? Any awards you've won?
I'll tell you, I don't apply for design awards.
Okay.
We've won awards.
We've gotten them, and when our clients ask us to submit, we do, but it's kind of like, I feel awkward asking for an award. You know what I mean? Because I have to actually ask somebody to give me this award, and it's kind of a weird thing. It doesn't seem right.
You should come to me.
Well, you know, if someone wants us to, like the FAA, they asked us, they came, when we finished the airport, they came to us and said, hey, we want to submit your, want you to submit on this because we think, you know, it's a great facility. And, you know, it won several awards out there, not all of them design awards. A lot of them had to do with just functionality of the airport, and they were within the FAA and the Spanish Department of Homeland Security and stuff. We have, I think, three or four design awards for the building,
too. And there's several other awards that are mentioned in that booklet that we did.
But, you know, you're not going to see a big long list that a lot of these other firms that I see on the table here could probably bring, because I just don't go for it. I want to be an architect, that's all.
Would you, you have 5 minutes. Do you want to use it or do you want us to ask you questions?
I'd rather you ask me.
Okay, then let's.
Can I just add that to your time?
Absolutely, yeah. You can, yeah, we're not going to cut your time at all. Okay. Rachel?
I have no questions.
Monica?
No, none, thank you.
Okay, how many in your firm?
15 right now.
Okay, and?
4 licensed architects.
3 administrations.
And is your, it sounds like you're very well rounded in your background. Is that what I'm hearing, that you've done a good portion of everything?
You kind of have to be in El Paso, to be honest with you, or if you're going to maintain a firm of any size. And, you know, we've done, I'll tell you our two biggest things, three. Educational, we do a lot of school. We do a lot of healthcare work. I love the hell out of healthcare work because it's very complicated. I'm a bit of a techno geek sometimes. It's very detailed. And then the airport's been my baby since 1991. I've done pretty much every major project around the terminal and the facility. I don't do airside stuff. I don't know anything about it. But I've done over $70 million of projects at the airport. So those are kind of my three biggies. But we also do retail. We did. Are you all familiar with Alamito, a Hope 6 project that was done downtown? It kind of falls in line with your smart growth stuff, because I don't know if you know it or not, but smart growth is sort of an outgrowth of the new urbanist movement that was developed a good 20 years or so ago. And we had done a project for the YWCA when El Paso Natural Gas left, and they gave them the old Waco Club out on Montana. Mm-hmm. And Myrna Deckert, who was the director back then, they knew that they got this property so they could sell it to make some money for YWCA as a donation. They didn't really need that big old piece of land. But Myrna wanted to make sure it got developed properly. And we had been talking to her a long time about new urbanism. So there's basically 5 people who kind of started the new urbanist movement. It was Andreas Duany and his partner, which I thought was Elizabeth, something I can't remember the name. Stefanos Palazzolis and his wife, and a guy named Bob Solomon. They started the Congress of the New Urbanists. So what we did is we brought in Stefanos Palazzolis and Andres Duany to work with us, and we developed a New Urbanist Master Plan for that entire 400 and some odd acres out there, along with a model building code, building types, and all that. And it really is, if you look at a smart growth and a New Urbanist document, they're very, very similar. Unfortunately, when they sold the land, they couldn't get any developers to carry through. So it was kind of a sad thing. But we were involved in that. So when, do you all know what Hope 6 is? It's kind of HUD's version of smart growth, where HUD will grant money to housing authorities if they will do new urbanist slash smart growth by community. So there's a housing complex downtown El Paso called Alamito. It was the very first public housing facility built in 1948, I think, if I remember right. And it was pretty well deteriorated. So we worked with them to apply for a Hope 6 grant, and they got $20 million some odd dollars out of HUD. So then we went and designed basically a new urbanist community. Then they changed directors and designed apartments. So it got carried to a certain level. I'm still waiting for that opportunity to really carry this through. I think El Paso's on the cusp of it. We're, you know, we keep. Green finally took effect after how many years, right? Community development, when El Paso is sort of the definition of urban sprawling, it's going to be tough, but you know, you work in the pieces where you can. And you try to create those bike trails and public accommodation and stuff like that. Am I out of time?
Are there any other questions?
How do you feel about the feasibility of using solar panels at this time for?
I think they're a great demonstration project. And I'll tell you what, I have a 4.9 kilowatt system on my house because I want to be the guinea pig. El Paso Electric does not know what to do with solar panels. People that generate electricity, at the time I last talked to them, there's only 36 in El Paso, and there's almost 400 in New Mexico side of El Paso Electric. But I didn't get a proper electric bill for over a year. That plus they degrade rather rapidly. The 4.7 kilowatts I get that first year during peak hour command. You know, there's a degradation over time to where, you know, several years would be expensive. The system was very expensive. I figured it was going to have a 20-25 year payback. It actually did what I thought it would do. And by then it will probably be junk. But somebody has to be the early adopters and try these things. So, like at the Socorro School, we built that, we're designing this demonstration project, and we're using the bus stops. Basically, the solar panels are going to provide shade for the kids and this learning opportunity, and they get to see it. So, you know, it's the bang for your buck thing, and that's kind of, I'd say it's a real key to our firm, because, you know, El Paso's not the wealthiest of communities. So when we design things, we want them nice, but we have to figure out a way to make them happen to where they do multiple things at a time. Does that make sense?
Okay. Time's up. We thank you so much. You've given us a wonderful presentation.
Well, thank you.
And we very much appreciate you coming and all you brought forth.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Smoke a cigarette. He's smart to talk.
Then with Carl Daniel and Ugo Saldana.
We got our slides. There you go.
Is the board for Kenny and Jim?
Yes. Are you living in Australia?
Good evening. It's a pleasure. Our girls. It's a pleasure. Good evening.
Hello, how are you? Hi, how are you? Monica Garcia.
There you go. Right now.
Thank you.
Okay, so you want to take a few minutes for the questions?
Ms. Searles, you want
to? Yes. Please have a seat. We're all very pleased to have you here this evening. There's questions in front of you. There are seven of them. We're going to give you a few moments, 3 to 4 minutes, to read those over, and then we'll give you 20 minutes to respond to the questions. At the end of the 20-minute response period, we'll ask you 10 minutes worth of questions. And if you run under, we'll take your time. We won't cut your time. Any way you look at it, you're going to get the full amount of time. But if I start... You know, giving you the cutoff, or I don't mean to be, or you hear the little beep beep over here from our timer, you know, it's time. Okay? So take a little while to read over the questions, please, sir.
Am I needing anything?
The winning Mega Millions ticket for tomorrow.
Okay. I'll take one for you.
Remember your friend. Oh, please don't write on that sheet. Oh, write on your pack. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, you forgot to tell you.
We just wrote the answer.
I'm sure they'll make copy of it.
The timer, and we won't read the questions. Just go ahead and roll.
The first question, if I can, I'll just start to address that. There's three reasons why, what sets us apart from the field, and I'll give you three reasons. And the first one's the most important one, probably the most important thing we'll say to you today, and I hope we get a chance to say it at the end, and that's this. We listen to our clients. I was taught that by one of the first firms I worked for out of college, is that if you listen to your client and understand that they are the specialist in what they do, we're pretty good architects, but the client is a specialist. So if we listen to our clients and produce a good piece of architecture, they'll like us and say good things about us, and we'll later claim their ideas are our own. So that's the first thing about us, that we listen to our clients. The second thing is that we have a lot of experience between the three partners in our firm in designing school facilities that we would love to bring to Kenya to you. I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, too, and play this. The third one is that my partner, Ugo Saldana, who's been my partner now for 5 years, worked in is on a school district as an owner for a number of years. Not only has he designed schools, but he's also sitting beside the table, and so he knows what your expectations are. And so we sort of bring that to the table. So those are the three things that we would say about our firm.
I just want to add a couple of comments. Most of all, I was involved in the Canutillo High School from beginning to end. I also was involved in the specifications in the programming of the school, and directly and indirectly with many other schools during my 10 years with Dr. Martinez. So I'm kind of very familiar with some of your buildings in County Independent Schools. I had my experience is that I've been studying about 14 schools already from K to 12, three high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools for most of the school districts.
Number two is how can great school architecture change the community? One way it does it through the LEAD program, too, is to allow the school to be used for community programs. It brings the community together and creates sort of a learning community when you do that. Designing a school, little kids are just, I have grandkids, and they're fun to be around, elementary school kids when you work in elementary schools. If the school building can be a teaching element also, if it can supplement what the teachers do and what the curriculum do and what the building then can do, contribute to that, the most important part of a student's life, because they spend about a third of it in school, is the teacher, by far. The second one that's the most important thing in their life is the curriculum that you all present and have to them. The third is the building, and it has a tremendous influence on them. It's the third thing I list on the list of importance, but it has a great influence on their lives. So if the building can be designed in a way that is actually a teaching and learning element, it contributes greatly to their ability to succeed in life when they graduate up. And we want to tell you a little bit about Chester Garden Elementary School, a little bit that relates to that. If I can skip now to number three. Kennedy Independent School desires to build a pre-K school through attains LEED recognition and incorporates neighborhood-friendly smart growth design. And a school that could win the statewide crown for school architecture. A couple things about that. We, as you may know from the newspapers, just received the LEED Silver Award, the first LEED certified school in El Paso area, Chester Jordan, or Socorro Independent School District. It is the first certified school, and it is LEED Silver, and that school was designed by our firm. I would indeed enjoy designing a school that would win the Bill Caudill Award, because in the 70s, I worked for Bill Caudill, and that's where I learned how to design schools. So he's a fantastic man. Caudill, Rutt, Scott is a firm, and we were the preeminent school design firm in the 70s, and I was there with them for many years. And I can tell you this, some of the things that I mentioned a while ago about listening to your clients, I learned from Bill Caudill. I learned a lot more from them than I did in college.
Yeah, the new school should have significant architecture that emphasizes separation and safety between the elementary and middle school companies, while at the same time emphasizes a single school philosophy. How would you incorporate desire in the design? Please share any relevant pre-K through 8 school experience you have. I was lucky enough to design a couple what we call the combo school for the Socorro Independent School District. And their concept of combining the K-5 with the 6, 7, and 8 was to use only one library and one kitchen for both schools, which would save them quite a bit of square footage. Now, there is the issue with the separation with the both schools, and yes, there was a chain fence that separated both schools because that was very critical. Both schools have a administration area, one for the K-5 and one for the 6-8. And at times, the school district was able to utilize the fields, the playing fields of the K-5, which kind of helped a lot. And one of the schools that I was able to design with Socorro was the Elfida Chavez and Manwood Middle School.
Talk a little bit about number five. Briefly describe your philosophy of practice related to design and programming. I want to refer a little bit again to Caudill, Rutt, and Scott. one of the things that also learned there is that they were the preeminent programming firm in those days for schools. Willie Pena, who I sat a couple seats from, wrote a book called Problem Seeking. And the reason he called it that is programming is such an important phase of designing a building. When we're designing a building in the schematic design phase and design development, we're really solving the problems. Programming is actually problem seeking. If you can not try to preconceive ideas during programming, and if you can just ask questions and understand as much as you can about the district or the students or the building or whatever you're designing in the programming phase, and quantify and put it down in a program, it gives you a much better shot at resolving and designing around those issues and problems that you found in programming during the schematic design phase. So programming is really problem seeking, and it's a very critical part of the design phase and should be kept separate from schematic design, as you already know.
Go ahead and take care of it, since this is...
Number six is construction manager at risk, and we are indeed pleased to learn that you're considering that approach, because we've done a number of projects, competitive sale proposals, and a render bid thing, and construction manager at risk. The construction manager at risk model brings a lot of advantage to a school district. The most important one, I'll say first, is that it eliminates the bid day surprises. We have just completed two major projects on the campus of the University of Texas at El Paso. One was the Foster Stevens basketball complex, and we were the lead design firm on that. And then the second one is the College of Health Sciences School of Nursing, which is a large $45 million project. And you just can't afford to get to bid day and have that thing go over. And we had the good fortune of doing that project with UTEP. There's a very sophisticated client, CM at Risk. The contractors brought on during the early phases, during programming, and during schematic design, and they track right along with us. And everything we design, they price. And so as we're designing, they're pricing. What it does is give you, the school district, the benefit of knowing what the costs are ahead of time. If you have a good architectural firm, they can really make adjustments and give you decisions to make during this design process that are related to cost. And if you have a good construction, seeing the risk on board, they can tell you what the actual costs are. We have wonderful estimators that we hire, and we have a lot of confidence in them. They're not going to build the building for you. The person that's going to build the building is the contractor. If we have their expertise on board during the design phase, we're going to avoid that bid day problem, and we're going to avoid change orders. There are going to be change orders in a project, but we're going to avoid most of them. So we really encourage you to approach this project with a construction manager at risk. We've done a number of schools that way. We've done a number of schools hard bid and design build.
One of the ones that we just recently completed was the K5, which we were teamed with BMAC as part of the this construction of this school.
CM at risk. We had some change orders in that project. We're going to tell you right now, you're probably not going to get through a project without change orders. I know I've been an architect for 40 years. Never had a project that didn't have any change orders. We gave the district back $300,000 on that project, and there's a way to do that. You have a contingency in the project, you have a contractor pricing it early, and a built-in contingency. And if a contractor is good, they'll have some buyout savings. And just like the Chester Jordan, the district receives at the end of the project, we just completed signing a $300,000 deduct change order, and that was the closeout of that school. So once again, it's the CM at risk that allows us to do that. We're not taking credit for that. We just think the process works so good. And last, the RFP also called architectural service related to smaller projects. We have done, made our living doing small projects for school districts. We have done kitchens, we have done gyms. We're doing a number of projects right now. We're doing bleacher additions to Burgess High School and Bowie High School, just bleachers. We're replacing the motors and the bleachers at Franklin High School. We're doing a two-bay metal building addition to the Westside Transportation Center for El Paso Independent School District. These are very small projects. That's our bread and butter, and it leads us to other projects. If we're successful in the little ones, we get bigger ones, and we have built up a tremendous client base in El Paso over the last 21 years doing small renovations and additional projects and having our clients like us when we finish. So we just do anything we can during the project to make sure that our clients like us when we finish. And just to end our comments, I'll say this. The fun part of the project is design. It's the easy part. It's the honeymoon. The hard part is building it. And when this construction starts, when the problem starts, we spend a tremendous amount of time. It's hard. It's difficult and at times frustrating. We spend a lot of time in construction administration with cost. That's where the clients get mad at us. And so we're there doing a lot of things that we have to do to keep clients happy. It means interrelating with the contractor and solving problems that sometimes they create by having additional meetings, additional inspections, additional punch lists. But if we do a good job in construction administration, when we finish, you'll like us. It won't be because of the drawings we did in the early stages. It'll be because of what we did in the CA phase. And we spend an awful lot of time in CA.
Just want to tell you a story about small projects. We were basically one time doing a research for one of the churches in Horizon. And part of the scope was to renovate the priest's house. And Carl and I are out there taking dimensions at 12 noon, sweating. And I look at Carl and say, Carl, we don't have to be doing this, but that's one of the points that I want to make, that we take any project from beginning to end. Carl and I will be there. If Carl's not there, I'll be there. So that's the commitment that we make for any project, any size. It doesn't matter.
We want you to be happy as a client, but it also means that you will say good things about us to other clients and keep our confidence building our business as we want. And the last, I'm going to repeat it one more time, what I said at the very beginning. The most important thing about our firm is this. We have computers, we have young people, we have smart people, we have fantastic designs, we have awards over the city. You've probably seen the convention center, Harding Medical Building, academic services building for UTEP. The most important thing we tell you about us is that we listen to our clients. You are the experts, and we're good architects, so we'll listen to what you're trying to achieve. Take your needs and concepts and turn it into a good building that you can afford. And if we do that, we'll recommend this to other people and give us other work.
Okay. You have 5 minutes out of your 20 left. You zipped right through that.
Yeah, I also want to emphasize that we do have experience. I've been involved in designing many schools. I understand the client's needs, I understand the student's needs, and we tend to design schools that are pleasing, that they promote teaching, that they stimulate the kids' learning environments, and we can use that school as a teaching tool. Now, Carl never mentioned this, but I told him to go ahead and mention it.
I'm going to say it.
Say it.
I'm the chairman of the United States Green Building Council, Green Schools Advocacy in El Paso. So I've sort of the lead for the last couple of years on going to schools and teaching students and teachers and kids about green schools and sustainable design, what it means. The elementary school kids are so eager to learn, and we have developed a program that is our own. We've taught, you know, what to say in Washington by USGBC, but we've developed a program within our firm, and we've asked, and after this interview, the selection process is finished, we would like to come out to your elementary school, go to the fifth grade and the science kids and that, and tell them what green school we have. It's on their level, and we can tell them. If we teach these kids about sustainability now, they're the ones that are going to do it in another generation. And the USGBC's goal is to have green schools in one generation. So we're going to do it at El Paso Independent School District. We've already done it. The Socorro School District has wholeheartedly embraced this concept, and that's why they have a LEED Silver School. We also have developed a program on teaching staff, your staff,
and any teachers who would like to sit in on what sustainable design is all about. We did about an hour and a half program, and this is it. It's developed by our firm for Socorro Independent School District, their staff, all their maintenance people and everything. And just telling what to look for in a sustainable building when you hire architects and contractors and what's expected of the contractors. I want to say a good thing about BMAC. They were instrumental in participating with us in obtaining that LEED Silver. If you don't have a contractor that's committed to LEED certification, they have to do a lot of work to achieve that. So we ask them, we put it in our specifications, of course, in our contract, but they wholeheartedly embrace the LEED thing too, and they help us get that LEED Silver certification. There's some details that go with that in these two programs we do. So we love to teach about green schools, and we'd love to come sometime and do it with your fifth grade kids. Socorro's kids made a video, and it was called Love. Living the Green Life. They had a video of kids up on the roof saying, why is the roof white? Why is it insulated? And he was singing, and they had music. They're science teachers. They're incredible out there. So we it's fun. That's a fun part of what we do. So we'd like to do that here sometime.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's
You have 2 minutes left, and then we'll have our 10.
Well, we can start if anybody has any questions at this time.
Questions? Lenti?
No.
Sir Jim?
I guess the question about incorporating natural light, obviously, is something that we want and goes along with the green. You know, and I know that solar is not yet. It's probably close to being there, but
not quite. It's close.
It's close, but do you incorporating any part of solar into the building, would that be feasible?
I'm going to tell you the short answer is right now probably no, but it's coming, and there's some things that we could do to supplement a little bit of the energy with solar panels. The payback, and we can do the studies and show you. What you want to do is make sure you invest money in something that's going to give you a return. So at the moment, and we've done it, the studies for other buildings in town, it's not quite there yet. The daylighting thing is, though, as far as saving energy and having the lights off, unless there's not enough daylight out there. And not only is it an energy efficient thing, but it also gives us points for the LEED certification. If we can put daylight into X percentage of the rooms so that you don't have to have all the lights on at the same time and you have two different levels. And that's what we did at Chester Gordon Elementary.
And it goes together with having sensors. So during the day, there are sensors, the lights dim down or turn, depending on what time it is. And at, let's say, 6 o'clock, 11 p.m., the lights, all the lights go out. So all that is related to daylight.
And it really does do a lot of things. It lessens absenteeism. It makes the kids more alert and improves their learning environment. It brings the community together. There's just an awful lot of reasons to do the sustainable design stuff we're all talking about today, plus protecting this place where we're doing our.
Board members, any other questions? Okay, we thank you very much. We appreciate your time, your effort, and hopefully.
I'm going to cheat off of our answers.
Thank you.
That
thank
was
you
a good
much.
One. Merry Christmas. Thank you. Good evening. Thank you.
Thank you. That
was cute. Yeah. It's called Tony.
I wanted to come in sooner, but I was frozen.
I really liked it.
It is cold?
Uh-huh. Okay, so do you want to just
no, off? It's no, let them talk for a while if I get red. Not the heater, please.
Well, okay, take a little break since we're
off.
Are they not here?
Yeah, yes. They're here.
Do you want to
yeah.
start?
It's
you
going to
start?
Okay.
Just roll.
This mean how this
yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting ready
to
talk.
Maybe. Can I have that chip with the big soft side?
You bet.
Thank you,
sir.
They
were
even yours to get.
I'll get them away.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a hard decision, guys.
And I like the honest guy.
When you keep looking at that.
Natural life. Natural life.
This is what I keep thinking. The natty lights.
The beer?
I like that.
That's your life, Beth?
Do you guys find this kind of YouTube building?
Oh. You know the nursing.
It's fine. Oh, my gosh. Where's he getting these people?
He went to pick them up.
At the airport. Are they ready, Doctor?
Yes, they're coming.
Okay.
Monica.
Okay. Everyone, por favor.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr.
Edgar Lopez.
Edgar Lopez.
Good evening, Edgar Lopez.
Good evening, Harna.
Gentlemen, we're pleased to have you here this evening. We have a format, very time-oriented. There are seven questions between your two chairs. Please don't write on the paper. You'll have about 3 to 4 minutes to read the questions, and then take 20 minutes to answer them. And after your 20 minutes of answers, you'll have 10 minutes to question you. So please take your 3 to 4 minutes and read over the questions, if you would. Thank you.
Let me know when you're ready to.
Ready?
Ready.
Okay. Okay. You may begin.
And we won't ask you the questions just in the, you know, savings of time.
Okay.
Just go ahead and deal with them as you will.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity, first of all, to expand on our qualifications to you all and the projects that you have under your bond program. My name is Jorge Mora, and this is Edgar Lopez. We are the principal faces that you will see working on your project or projects. In other words, what sets us apart from the other firm? And I agree with you. Any architect, any good architect can design a school or a renovation project. But we think that what sets us apart is our ability to listen and our ability to get along with people. We have
repeat clients such as Socorro Independent School District, Isleta Independent School District, El Paso Independent School District. We've done many, many schools for each one of those school districts, and we continue to do so. We were awarded the New Cliff High School, which is a $40 million project. Never having done a project for Clint, in spite of many bond programs that they have passed over the years, and us knocking on their door asking for an opportunity, we ended up getting the biggest job out of their bond program, which is, again, a $40 million high school. And again, we believe it's because of our ability to listen to our clients' needs, not only in terms of program requirements, but budget constraints and meet the schedule. We're cognizant of the fact that the school districts ideally would like to have a school completed by the start of the fall semester. And so we work from that date backwards in setting milestones, in meeting with the school district, understanding your goals and objectives. The other thing that we feel is a strength within our team is our ability to get along with the construction industry. And we have been fortunate to experience construction management since it arrived in El Paso. It started with Socorro Independent School District about 15 years ago, and we've done several projects for Socorro, including the current Eastlake High School and the Clint High School. It's also a construction management area. Not that we are in cahoots with a construction site or with the construction manager, but we work as a team, as a professional team. And I worked in construction when I was going to school. That's how I paid my way through school, by working in the construction industry. I have a lot of respect for the tradesmen that are out there working on our buildings during the 110 degree days of summer to the 32 degrees in winter. I know what it's like. And so I have a lot of respect for the industry, but by the same token, I'd like to treat them as professionals and treat them as part of the team. So as your architect, we're tasked with the responsibility of managing millions of taxpayer dollars. And we're very respectful of that, very cognizant, and we will protect the school district's best interest when it comes to managing your funds. So again, as I said earlier, we're not the only architects in town or in the state of Texas, but we feel that we're very well suited for your projects. We're local. We have the experience, and as you can see in the handout that we just provided you with, we have many, many, many schools under our belt, new schools and renovation projects. The second question is, how can a grade school architecture change a community drastically? We've been working with Socorro Independent School District since Socorro was a small, rural, a small, rural school district that serviced the needs of, educational needs of an agricultural community, basically, because Socorro Independent School District was founded in El Paso's Lower Valley, serving the residents of the Socorro, Moon City, those communities down there. And at the time that we started with Socorro, they must have had maybe 10 or 12 campuses altogether, one high school, that being Socorro High School. We've been working with Socorro over the past 20 years and have seen just a tremendous growth in the district. Unfortunately, a new school building or a school building is the best and nicest facility that a child may be in. That child may be having problems at home. The parents may be separated or divorced. They may be sleeping in a bedroom, sharing a bed with other siblings. They may live with an uncle and an aunt. I personally see those stories because I sit on the foundation, on the board of the foundation for Socorro. And so we raise money for scholarship monies. And every April we get to see the applications from high school students from each of the high schools in the district. And the stories that we read about these young people that are straight A students, and yet they
have to work part-time to help their parents meet ends. They share a house with their cousins or multiple siblings. They may have a parent in prison. And yet these kids are outstanding individuals, hard workers, straight-A students, just looking for an opportunity to move on and go to college. And as I said earlier, that classroom, that cafeteria, that library that they're in during the day is the best environment that they may live in. And so we understand how good school architecture and good school design can affect a young person's life. The trends that interest us in school architecture these days, I don't think that we're trendy in our design philosophy. I think if you see the pictures in our brochure that we just passed around, we don't have a particular style of design. We will design to fit the project. Whether it's the terrain, whether it's the environment, whether it's in a historic area of a city, whether it's in a rural community. As far as educational trends, back when I was in college, the in thing was the open classroom. And basically it was not a series of classrooms per se, but a large space that was shared by maybe two or three classes and two or three teachers, and the idea was that they would share ideas and collaborate in teaching the kids. That was back in the 80s. And then in the early 90s, it was the house concept, at the high school level at least, to where the freshmen and the sophomore and the juniors and the seniors class were being taught by the same group of teachers, if you will. In other words, the teachers that started with the freshman students, they followed them through their sophomore year and junior year and senior year. And instead of being a part of a 2,500 or 3,000 student population, the groups were broken out into smaller family groups. And so the teachers would see the same students rotate through their classes, and they could track these students. And then the teachers would compare notes and make sure that if this student was doing well in this teacher's class, why wasn't he doing well in that teacher's class? And they would collaborate and try to find a solution to help those students. That was the family concept. We designed America's High School and Chapin High School to address that concept. Now, if you look at the plan of both America's and Chapin, there are individual modules of classrooms. Where these group of students would migrate from pod to pod, if you will. So we're not educators. We're architects. We will listen to your goals and objectives and your educational facility, and then mold the building and the spaces to meet whatever educational concept the district wishes to pursue.
And I want to point that out. Now one of the national trends is to be LEED certified. But since many years ago, we've been trying to implement LEED points into our buildings, even before we knew that it exists. Because we're trying to make it local, we're trying to make it durable, we want to make it sustainable. Now is we find out that we've been doing so many schools and so many projects that they comply with so many points. But we don't go after. We don't need to go after LEED. But if you see our project over so many years, they remain the same, they are durable, they comply with so many principles of LEED. So that's one of the trends that we've been using for years. Because I think we're concerned about the use of the building, the user, principle, and the minds.
Actually, Edgar touched on question number three. I want to go back to number two and explain to you how we work with the owners to create and build a community-changing school. Again, we believe that we're part of a team. we're not prima donnas to the point of thinking that we know it all and that we're going to tell you how to do it. As I said earlier, we're not the educators. We're simply here to facilitate you in providing those facilities that are going to provide that environment where the kids can learn comfortably and receive a worthy education. Another worthy example, I think, besides the Lower Valley schools that we've done is what we did at Eastlake High School. Eastlake High School serves the Sparks community. And the Sparks community for many years was known as one of these colonias on the outskirts of El Paso that didn't have any water or sewer utilities, and people would go out and buy a piece of desert and build a shack, if you will. Those students deserve a first-class education like anybody else in the city does. And if you have an opportunity to walk through Eastlake High School, you will see that it's a fantastic environment for a young person to learn and to be encouraged to go on to higher education. That school has the latest in educational trends, trends in food service. The cafeteria is designed as not a cafeteria with four walls, but a dining space similar to what you would find in a food court at a mall. The serving lines, there are about eight to ten serving lines, and each serving line has a different theme. There's a hamburger line, there's a pizza line, there's a sandwich and salad bar, there's the pastry bar, the hot dog bar, and then we have the design concessions areas throughout the school that Child Nutrition Services operates one of those, and they transport the food from the kitchen over to the concession. So the kids don't even have to go to the dining area anymore. They can eat at a satellite concessions area in another part of the school. The school has also brought in Pizza Hut and Subway sandwiches, and those businesses operate a concessions and they sell.
You're down to 6 minutes. Okay. And still got a lot of questions to go.
Regarding LEED, as Edgar stated earlier, it's not a choice in our firm. We pursue the principle. And we obtained not only LEED certification on Cielo Vista Library for the city of El Paso, but we obtained gold certification. So we exceeded the expectations of the city in that regard. And under the budget. It didn't cost any more money. Question number four, the new school should have significant architecture to emphasize the separation and safety. We understand what that means. We designed the first combo school for Socorro Independent School District about 15 years ago. And the idea behind the combo school is that the school district bought one parcel of land, and they had a need for an elementary school and a need for a middle school. And we designed two independent schools that shared a kitchen and shared a library. And security was a huge concern for the school district at the time also. But the campus was designed in such a way that, again, the two age groups were separated physically by the cafeteria and by the library. Our philosophy regarding design programming, we can't design a school if we don't have programming. And programming begins with us prompting the school district for your goals and objectives and your wish list and basically what is the mission of this particular school for that particular neighborhood. And so that's where a successful project eventually begins, in the programming phase. We will facilitate that with you by meeting with the educators, with administration, with the board, with the community, if you wish. We together all that information that will eventually lead to the design of the school. Question number six, regarding construction management at risk. We've been working with that delivery method since, 15 years ago when Socorro Independent School District first started using the construction manager at risk delivery method. They started with a combo school, and ever since then, construction manager at risk has been a more common delivery method that schools, districts choose to use. Not only school districts, but the University of Texas at El Paso, or the University of Texas system is also a big believer in construction management at risk. What we like about it is that the construction manager works as a member of the team. It's the owner, it's the architect, and it's the construction manager. And both the architect and the construction manager are selected on a professional qualifications basis. In other words, you would interview the construction manager just like you're interviewing architects and determine who is the best fit for you all. And so in my opinion, the construction manager at work at risk truly works for the district. They're not working for the subcontractors. They're working for a set fee and a set percentage. You know what the expenses are, you know what the costs are, you know what their profit is. And so the delivery method is exactly what it says, construction management. They're managing the construction site for you as an owner. We really like that delivery method. And the RFQ called for architectural services for other projects. And we have done projects for a doctor's office, 1,500 square feet. We just turned in a project for a client that involved cutting an opening in the wall and putting a door, all the way to $40 million projects. Eastlake High School, by the time it is all said and done, will probably be worth $80 million. Phase one, phase two, phase three, which we have designed in all. So we are capable of doing any one of your projects or all of your projects. We would feel very fortunate to continue doing work for Canotillo Independent School District. And again, in our brochure that we just distributed, we've shown some pictures of before and after projects where, for instance, we took the Region 19 service center at the corner of Boeing and Airways and completely changed its appearance. We were fortunate enough to be hired by Hoy Fox to redo their Mercedes dealership and completely transformed that building. And then another small building that's kind of hidden and out of the way is an old building that used to be a city library in the Fox Plaza area, or Centro de Salud Familiar La Fe. The La Fe organization bought the building from the city, and then we designed a new clinic in there and completely transformed that building. So we've done renovation work, we've done new facilities, we've done restoration work. We're capable of doing any one of those projects for you.
Perfect timing. We've got 10 minutes now for some questions. Letty, would you like to start? Sergio?
Thank you.
I feel like you've been very comprehensive. Armando?
No, I'm good, thank you.
I'm good. Anything you would like to tell us? Any awards, any, you know, things other than the questions we've asked you, maybe something that you just feel like you'd like to bring to the table then in this next bit of time?
Yes, we've received, as a matter of fact, this year we received two design awards.
For DEA?
Yes, as a matter of fact, a DEA facility that we designed for Horik Development. They're a private contractor developer, but they build buildings to suit government agencies. And so we designed a DEA facility in Las Cruces for them, which just won us a design award from the local AIA chapter. We received a LEED Gold on Cielo Vista Library. We're working on obtaining LEED Silver for Glory Road Transit Terminal, which is across the street from the Don Haskins Center. Which, go figure, a parking garage being LEED certified. But it's doable. And again, I'd like to think that the reason for our repeat clients, again, we've been working with Socorro School District for 20 years, El Paso for 20 years, Isleta, the city of El Paso. And we'd like to think that it's because of our ability to manage a project as a whole. We're very service oriented. We're located in El Paso. We're available at a moment's notice. We can attend a meeting for programming requirements. We can attend a meeting with your maintenance staff to hear that what they would like to see on a moment's notice. We can be at a job site in a moment's notice to have a discussion with a contractor over some clarification they may need. So I'd like to think that we're very responsive. We get along well with others, or as maybe some teachers would like to say, we play well with others. And I think that's our greatest strength, that we take our job seriously. We live in this community, first of all. There are many buildings that I drive by every day, and the last thing I want to do is drive by a building that we had a bad experience. And so what drives us is that fear of failure. That's what drives me, that's what drives Edgar, that's what drives our firm, the fear of failure. And I think that fear of failure leads us to push ourselves harder, address our clients' needs, respectful of the budget, respectful of schedules, respectful of the people that are going to live in that building and the students that are going to occupy that building. Some of these students will be in that building for 8 years, or maybe 9, pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. So, and one of the biggest satisfactions that we get is walking through a school and seeing these kids just enjoy the facility
and enhance their lives.
And enhances their lives. And the teachers, and the custodians, and the principals that just become so proud of the facility. And so, in a sense, we take ownership of our project. It's very hard for us to just hand the keys at the end of construction, because we've been living through a project, in some cases, through 3-4 years.
Like a son.
Yeah.
Well, one dimension is we're local.
I'm sorry.
We have one question.
I'm sorry. I do have a question about the Eastlake High School.
Yes, sir.
What is the extra cost in terms of the cafeteria facilities where, you ended up putting actually different serving lines instead of the traditional and making it like a food court? I saw some of those pictures on there. And
well, I can say that.
Is it extra cost in terms of the kitchen facilities, or is it just the dispensing that's the difference?
I think it's a function. Let me see. First of all, the school districts have realized, especially when they're in a neighborhood or near a commercial center, the school district realizes that they're going to be competing against the Taco Bells and the Whataburgers and the Wendy's. And so they want to keep that business in-house. So the cafeterias and the kitchens are being designed to compete with those private businesses. Second of all, it becomes a safety and security issue. They don't want the kids to leave the school campus because the kids go off and get in trouble during lunch. Third, it's a way of enhancing, again, the students' daily life. Eastlake High School's food service equipment was right at $1 million, $900,000+ worth of kitchen equipment. That included all of the the ranges, the skillets, the no more fryers, because that's a no-no in child nutrition centers. And the concessions, the serving lines. So it was almost right at $1 million. So I don't know that the school district was surprised, or that they said we're over the budget. They deliberately set out on that mission to serve the students in that way.
And again, that's only for 3,000 students.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The reason there are multiple themes is because eventually the high school's going to serve 3,000 students.
Wow.
We're working on phase three now. Phase one and phase two was about 270,000 square feet worth of building. Phase three, which we're working on now, is another 250,000 square feet. So in order to serve that many students, the kitchen and the serving lines have to be that way.
Yes.
And the other thing about the cafeteria, it's not a traditional cafeteria like the one we're used to.
Time is up. We thank you very much, and thank you for addressing our questions, our issues, and we appreciate your time tonight. Merry Christmas as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
And Dr. Lee, do you have anything to give?
Is this your phone?
Yeah.
One more.
Is it broken? Was it broken? No,
yeah, you broke one. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
We still can't. Because we have space. Our high school, we can still do that when we expand it.
We have a small cafeteria.
We have a very small cafeteria.
Yeah.
And we need to expand it sometime.
And
some
I have
time.
A table.
For future. For future would be a great idea.
Okay, next one's coming.
For future, it's a great idea.
I like that concept, though.
It's nice.
I like that concept, and, future expansion.
Yeah, that would be not as many kids will need. Maybe not as many kids will need.
That is a good, and maybe even, maybe not to the extent that the PK through 8, but maybe offer a couple different lines instead.
Oh, yeah.
In our PK through 8. That would be.
And I like the expansion on that.
Yeah, our cafeteria is really easy. But we've got space.
Yeah,
that we do.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
We have space to expand it. So. And we are considering that.
Because I don't know what the word is. I like that teacher.
Oh, yeah.
But if we don't do that.
Because they're going to get confused.
And all around here. Just
and then they don't come back.
Nope.
That's the problem. They
so that's our next.
Yes. Project.
Plan.
Yeah, project plan. For the project.
Mm-hmm.
Did he go pick them up?
Mm-hmm. You notice
yeah, I would.
Oh, I
see.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello. Good evening. Good evening. Pleasure, Larry Cyril. Good evening. Pleasure, Larry Cyril. Good evening, Chris Larry Cyril. You will find a list of 7 questions in front of you, sir. Please don't write on the list. We will have a time constraint of 3 to 4 minutes for you to read over the questions, and then 20 minutes to respond to the questions. After your response, we will have 10 minutes to ask you questions. And hopefully I won't have to, give you any bad signs or interrupt you, but if I do, it's not out of disrespect, it's only a time thing. So, please go ahead and get started. Read over the questions.
Thank you.
Are you ready to begin?
Okay.
I guess to the first one, pretty much the way I see it, what stands for the part, I think for the most part, GA would kind of meet as a principal, and I'm pretty much the principal of Wonder Woman that's supposed to be really leading the show on the project. For the most part, I have always been very much involved in the projects from start to finish. And I'm saying start as from the day one that we're talking about right now to going through the design. I am very much involved because I draw it as well, okay? And as I'm aware and pretty much I know what your expectations are, whatever expectations are brought up at that time, we address some, and sometimes me as a principal addresses some because I know kind of what's going on and understand. And then from there it goes into the schematic design, and the design development instruction documents. During those times, I'm very, very much in control of the project. In this, we're dealing with projects where you have construction managers at risk that you need to meet with them and talk to them and make sure that the things are kind of flowing in the proper way, and the tent flow is going straight up, okay? And pretty much as the principal in charge, I am that person that pretty much is there. There's an office that says the principal, yeah, I'm pretty much involved. And you see him, and then all of a sudden you don't see him. But for me, I've always considered myself a workaholic. I'm here pretty much day and night or whatever time it is. But that's something that I've always, I'm proud to say that I am a person that, and as an office, we run an office that believes in the hands-on type of situation. You know, and we like to listen, and that's one thing that I'm going to say it too, kind of through ISD, the expectations are super high, and since I've been involved with you all for 6 years, those expectations have never changed. And yes, there's issues with monies, but who's to say that with those expectations you cannot do what you want? And that's something that's very important to us. We listen. We meet your needs. There's a lot of input, and people in this table here always have input, and we need to make sure that we address those inputs. And the last thing, like I said, is those expectations, and we will meet your expectations. And actually, you want to exceed those expectations. How can the on the architecture change the community? One thing that pretty much I've always been very much involved in projects, and these projects, when you meet the community, you're building a project for the community, and I'm going to go back to the concept of these expectations. I'm here. I understand kind of those expectations from the board, from the community, and from the end user. So really, what I'm saying is I'm working for the kids. If I'm creating a good sense of architecture in a manner that the kids are learning, and we know that an educational space has to be inviting. It cannot be very closed-minded. It cannot be very, very non-interactive space. You need to make sure that you provide those interactive space, because the whole point of why we're here, The whole point of why we're here is because we're here to make sure that these kids are learning beyond what we've learned. Okay, we're going through what called changes, and these changes are very important in life now. These changes are no longer the way we used to do buildings, or the way we used to do schools. You know, where you had a classroom, and then basically you had a window, you looked out, and somebody was teaching. It's all about technology. It's a different environment. So we need to work with those changes. Pretty much be involved in those changes that people are doing. Why can't ISD take those steps? And I think that's, and I'm one of them that was done, I can't remember, 7 years ago, when you decided to do your high school. And that's a perfect example of a change that today nobody really has a school like the high school. You can talk about a little bit of that, Lee, John?
I've got some supplemental information here that, if I may, I can pass out.
Yes, please.
It's just information material that pertains to an architectural lead firm that we would utilize in creating this school that the district is looking to have lead recognition. And we have chosen this architectural firm for lead consulting services, as they are a well-known firm, East Coast, that has had numerous schools that have been lead certified. Their principals, they've got over 11 firm principals that are lead certified. And they've got over 50 schools, educational projects, from regular certification lead to green schools, and we tap their services and their advice and to assist us in working with the district to best find a idea solution to accomplish this goal, and to be able to have a school that the district can be proud of and say, state-of-the-art certified school, depending on the level of certification that the district will want to accomplish, whether it be a silver, platinum, gold type of a certification. You know, at that point, they're well-respected. They've got a lot of schools, and I've just put just a few pictures on there just for reference, but they've got extensive knowledge in the certification of it. Get in contact with them, and they're looking to be part of the team as a process.
Kind of to add to a little bit of the lead, but I think kind of for us, I think we've been doing lead buildings for a while, and if people say, well, you know, it's something new. Honestly, tell you the truth, we've been doing that. And as a poor person, pretty much you tend to save stuff, you tend to collect stuff, you tend to recycle stuff. So to say that we haven't done it, one thing is kind of the way I see it is now it's okay, we have to pretty much call it work with the environment, okay? I'm pretty much saying is that it's always been there. It's always been there. Right now, let's say for the past, I can't say so many years that I've done projects with the 4-5 system on schools. Those schools, and in El Paso Independent School District, the district was one of them that really did 4-5 system. That's really lends very well to a lead building where you're trying to conserve energy, and you're going with water, you're hot and cold water. So that is one of them. To say that we've never done it, it's been there. You know, with site planning your building. You know by now you gotta be careful how you situate your building, the visibility of the building, where the daylight coming in, where the sun is not coming in, what you face. So to say that, and I'm gonna say the majority of the architects in El Paso and everywhere, we've all been doing it. I mean, and it's history. It's history because pretty much from our forefathers that came from. You know, it's nothing that they say, let's put our building right in front of the sun so we can get hot all the time. You know, so it's something that we are doing, you know. But the biggest thing is kind of now is kind of creating those high performance systems. and being very very efficient with those systems. The quality of life inside those workplaces, and that's a very very important thing that I mentioned earlier. Changing of the times. What we used to be in a classroom that had one window and it basically that was it. Now the kids can't be. They need to kind of be looking at it. The change now they're dealing with technology. So that's when the dealings with the qualities of life in the workplace. You have back to those mechanical and electrical systems to better the environment, to save money. One thing is that I'll be honest, we can really create a good architecture. But in the long run, you all will have to kind of deal with the mechanical, electrical, and really what we're dealing is saving costs, saving money, and maintenance costs. That is something very important to a lot of us that, you know, we cannot just kind of keep dealing with electric lights when you leave the place and pretty much you forget to turn off the lights. Now that's another thing when you deal with electrical, that you start having to have these systems where that they control the lights. So those are little things that kind of deal with the that have a big impact to a school district or to anybody. On projects, and we understand kind of from a pre-K to an eighth from pre-Kers to eighth grade, we understand kind of where you do have to have the separations. I think kind of and I'm going to talk about this one because my understanding, and we have visited the site, and this site is kind of interesting because it's not a level site. We normally deal with level sites. This one has a lot of movement, which in this case is going to be better for us. And the reason why I'm looking at that is and because I think when you have level changes, when you have level changes, it helps you. It helps you control kids in one area to another area, and that's what's kind of nice about this site versus other places. It's just flat. Here you've got level changes that will help kids. You control kids in a separate area, the pre-Ks or the seventh graders, way out there. But where normally what has been done is you find yourself having, let's say for example, a common space, which is in this case the cafeteria, the gym, really the one that really is the division separator between two units, is between the elementary unit and then you got the middle school unit. Right in the middle you find the common space, pretty much everybody's going. What we kind of are very true to is that we really, when it comes to space like that, we need to make sure that the administration space has to be the first thing, because that is the one that really is in control. I'm not a person that really likes to have interior administrative buildings in the middle or not in administrative spaces in the middle, because really by the time I, as a parent, go into the administration building that's over there, I pretty much have gone that way, in all sorts of directions. So for me, and that's something that is, as you come in, is between, you're going to have kind of one wing or something going to one side for the older kids, another to the younger kids. But no matter what, that is a space that needs to kind of be pretty much the heart. And I've always said the administration component has to be the heart. It cannot be where it's towards the back or kind of in the middle, because in reality, in the middle, it's not good. And what we're dealing right now is you, as the administrators, the principals, they need to be pretty much seeing what's happening outside, inside, and have all sorts of eyes from all sorts of directions. So that's kind of the way I see as a separation. Really, the common space would be the separation. If it's between the library, the gym, the cafeteria, because pretty much everybody's kind of filtering to that, but you still keep them separate. And then the level change is going to be, I think it's going to be nice. On the description of our philosophy of the design program, normally our philosophy on a design program is to go through what is known as a charrette. A charrette is all interested parties will be sitting down in this particular location, and we were going to kind of say, this is what our program, this is our philosophy, this is what we want to do, this is what our needs are. Every project needs to be taken differently. You can't say, well, this is what I did at the pre-K over here at blank and blank. Well, this is what I did at Socorro, or this is what I did at blank. So what you have to do, at all individuals, because everybody has its own different needs. So we would go with a charrette. We would sit down and give us, we would have to kind of all our different points and what is important to that particular, in this case, campus, okay? And I know what's strange is really that there's no campus exists, but we're going to have to kind of filter some of those students from other, or students, administrators, to give us who is going to create that particular component, okay? So for me, it's a charrette, and we've done it several different times, and we've learned a whole lot, because what we thought was important to us is not what's important to us. It's really important to the different parents and community, and in this case, what's interesting is that you are bringing the community into the feedback. At first, we might kind of bring in, you know, just bring in students or whatever. What do you want out of your school? You know, and it's so funny because you hear a lot of stuff, and the important thing is you make people aware. You make people part of the 4 minutes. Okay. Well, that's just short. Okay, on the construction manager of this, and I know kind of pretty much, in this case, we met this construction manager of this because I've been involved since they got this project. I think on this, the biggest thing on the construction manager at risk is we need to make sure that we all are working as a team, okay? And in this case, team is very important to all of us, okay? Make sure that we all are, whatever we're doing, we need to make sure that we are pretty much giving them that information, or whoever the information is going to, but really work as a team. And I think hopefully people understand what I mean, and I don't want to go kind of the whole thing, but team is very important to all of us in that type of environment. On the projects, I think pretty much even those, I think we've been very much involved with a lot of the projects that are on hand here, and what I mean by that is we've been doing a lot of the on-call services. We've been involved in and see what the needs are in those spaces. We know what's happening at the high school level. We know what's happening at Loretta. We know what's happening at Davenport. We know what's happening at some of these other areas that we kind of are knowledgeable, understand the your needs. And just because for the past 6 years, we've been pretty much your architect in and on-call services. You know, there's things that even just, I remember talking about the gym. You know, there's things that we gotta remember on the gym. There's how can, what we meet your expectations. And I had kind of, I can't remember who I had talked to, but I've done it before, like in a gym. You know, people have a habit of getting the bleachers, moving them to the back. By moving to the back, moving to the front. At this in the front, it creates a barrier. You can use the gym here. And at the back side, you can use as an alternate classroom, whatever. And it works super darn good, because normally when it does this, you have, and I'm going to say, you got playing here, you got the cheerleaders here, and nobody's doing nothing, nobody's paying attention. So at that point, hey, you move your barriers to the front, or your bleachers to the front, and now you have spaces that you didn't account for. You got classrooms. Where we did it is as when I was with Alvarez, we did it at the Eastwood Middle High School, and it said move them to the front, and we created the room walls. Now those spaces became spaces for educational purposes. And did you pay more for it? No, you didn't. And I think that's where you got to go beyond the box. You got to meet people's expectations, in this case, your expectations. How do you solve those? By just thinking in different manners. And why do the bleachers have to? Oh, they have to be always to the wall. No, move them to the front. And those barriers can create separation. We do green walls, we put a door on there, and you got an instant classroom. And those classrooms are for PE, for whatever. Because intent is for them not to use the wood floor. They can use them. So those are little examples that I can, that we have, that we've done before, that we kind of want to bring to the district.
Well, I guess, and can we do it in 1 minute? And it's kind of like what I said earlier. We understand your expectations, your requirements of the board, the community, and the end user. But for the most part, I really work for these kids, as you work for the kids. And that's what it is. I think if we can meet the expectations of the kids, and you can see somebody smiling, and the kid, and you say, darn, I learned. And not just that, they become better educated than us. I think we have done our job. And that's what's important for us, or for our team.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Board members? Betty? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get right now?
No.
Let's see. Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yeah.
I was not on the board, apparently, during your on-call period in time here. Did you have anything to do? You've mentioned bleachers a lot. Anything to do with our secondary gym and the bleachers in there?
In that, there was, I was, what was it? When we were, I'm the architect for Region 19 as well, okay? Mm-hmm. At Region 19, pretty much when we said, actually the point, that Region 19 had to pretty much, move themselves out of where they're at right now, or where they were at Alderete. And pretty much at that point, I was asked to create a concept idea for that gym. And I was pretty much, the idea was to be right there where Region 19 old facility used to be. So I had kind of created a sketch for that. And pretty much I knew the issue there is really is a drainage issue. So I think, it's between we put that gym there, or really, where does it really belong? Does it become more attached to the existing Alderete?
I meant at the high school. I'm sorry. No? I just got the answer. No. Okay. Thank you. That was my question. Okay, thank you very much. Armando, any questions?
No questions.
Monica?
No.
And Rachel?
No.
Would you all have
a question? I'm sorry. We may come up with the funds, hopefully during the savings in term for the gym projects. And I mean, obviously, there's a way we would like to do that if being able to put classrooms. And I like the idea that you're talking about, because that could save us a lot of money if we don't have it. But additionally, would obviously be able to do an alternate in terms of an alternate phase if we're able to save money to put classrooms, even apart from moving the bleachers in there in some manner. Have you done any kind of design in that area?
In
classrooms attached to gyms? Or do you have any concepts for that?
On that, what you normally do is really on what you end up doing is what you call a more multi-purpose space. Okay, and instead of trying to kind of create all these classrooms, okay, and you really kind of create a big multi-purpose space, introduce folding partitions, and those folding partitions gives you what I call them breakout rooms or breakout room spaces, because one day you might need a big space like that because it's raining outside and mom you say all the cheerleaders need to kind of tumble there or whatever, or you start breaking it up because the chess club needs to kind of have their own activity space. Okay, so for me, in part of the changes that we've done, what we know as a classroom is no longer a classroom. Classroom now, you kind of, it's all technology. So the more space you have for a big activity that you can break it down, it works a lot easier. At Region 19, I'm saying Region 19 because that's a big, humongous space that we did, and it's broken down into different breakout rooms, and they're using it for different activities. So, for me to say here, let's do this big giant space like this, and then we put all these classrooms. I think you already have classrooms. I think what you're doing is you need spaces that you can kind of do different functions in different spaces.
Any other questions, board members? You have got 3 minutes. Is there something you'd like to tell us, wrap up, any?
I think for me as a wrap up, and I think pretty much like I've always said and to a lot of you and pretty much to the district, I think GA pretty much has always been very committed to Canutillo. And that's one thing for me. I didn't grow up in Canutillo, but pretty much my heart is still here. It will always be here. And that's something that it's never been. Why? And I'm telling you why, and I'm being sincere. because when I opened my office, Canutio ISD was the one that gave me the opportunity. But Canutio providing me the opportunity to now, my office has been very successful in it, and that's God honest truth. And that's reality.
Just 2 minutes, anything else?
Well, I just wanted to just kind of add a little bit more to it in reference to one of these questions that what would set us apart from other schools, or this school being from any other schools. Last year we finished the Isleta Pre-K. A lot of things, it's a wonderful school, but the thing about it is we just don't design a school for an adult mind. We kind of put ourselves in a child's mind. Whether it being a pre-K, whether you sit down on the floor and see what things look like from that point. I mean, there's several instances at the school that we did, pre-K. People were wondering, why is there a window down there? Well, you know what? Pre-K children are this high. They're able to sit out there and look from being to the classroom. So we get down on the floor and think about it. And we designed this, you know, this school with ideas in mind that the children don't just get in the classroom to learn. The school is, we try to think about it, even they're learning even without them knowing. Whether it's coming into the school and seeing designs, colors, ideas, where they're receiving this input from the school, whether it be colors, coded designs, letters, that they don't know they're learning that.
Normally when we start a project, getting into the architecture part of it, with every project has to have a concept. It has to have a concept. Anything you do has to have a concept. And from the initial start of what we call it, charrette, we will create a concept. We will create a concept. What is our concept? You know, and the pre-K was the first book. And that was we all started because it looked like a book. It's the first nursery rhymes. We all remember somebody giving you the first nursery rhymes or you giving it to your kids. And in the pre-K, pretty much, you see Humpty Dumpty, you see this, but at the beginning of the inside, you start once upon a time. So you basically, it's a story that you let them through. And with a concept, anything gets achieved. And whatever you do, you have to have a concept, and you follow it through.
I thank you, gentlemen, very much. The entire board thanks you. And Merry Christmas. And we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Somebody needed it. Thank you very much. Somebody needed an extra copy.
It's a pleasure.
Okay.
Do you think we're stopped? Or recording? No, it's recording. Okay, let's